This week on Culture File, we're off to Toyland, though not on a shopping trip. We're looking at the shape of toy marketing, from what branding means in children's toys and how to equip your children to resist it, to the emergence in the shops of what we call the toy industrial complex, with fairy drones and stealth technologies hovering furtively around the Christmas stocking this year. Tomorrow we'll be test driving a new version of Monopoly, in which all the properties are famous brand names, and on Wednesday we'll be talking to brand expert Martin Lindstrom, but this time I'm talking to our regular tech expert Aisling Kelleher of Carnegie Mellon University about why the arrival of military technology in Toyland could even be a good thing for her and her daughter Iris.
Yay! There's something delightful in some way about the idea of finally being able to pilot your little Tinkerbell so they can fly and flit around the place. I actually tried out one of these. It's not a fairy, but it's a hand gesture controllable astronaut. Pretty tricky for a four-year-old to try and control that. But I think the kind of the fairy idea, or just being able to control characters in this particular way, is pretty intriguing. But whether or not it would be much more amenable to a child to think about, well, not only can I play and control this fairy, we now have the electronics out there and the electronic kits in particular that are directed towards really young children from upwards of 5 years in age. So rather than just being like, hey, I can play with this toy, I'm like, you know what, I could actually make my own flying figure. It could be a fairy, it could be something from Lord of the Rings, it could be a kind of a Harry Potter thing or whatever, or a story that the child makes up themselves. That I think what we're seeing is that as the electronics and the control systems, these get cheaper and they're now kind of available anywhere, very easily affordable and to buy online. What would be great is to see kids going, well, you know what, I can create my own flying X. It doesn't necessarily have to be a fairy. It is whatever interests them.
The other trend that I see quite a lot of is the arrival of what they call hardened pads. And these are versions of iPads or tablet devices which have undergone a kind of military spec to make them very heavy and durable so that they can be put into the hands of 3, 4, 5-year-olds without breaking.
Yeah, I think part of the language about that, the idea of it being hardened, which is a very kind of militaristic understanding in terms of that, for example, it might be something that has a very limited internet access or has high security or protocol. That idea of using that terminology to describe something that could also be understood as, well, it's just good parental control, or it's good industrial design, in that when you buy something, you don't want to break it if you spill water on it or if a kid drops it. I think one way to think of where I would see this idea of hardened tablets or hardened devices being very, very useful, not necessarily just in the consumer market, or in places like children's museums and science galleries or installations or in outdoor playgrounds. Or, you know, the idea if you have a large volume of kids playing with a particular type of tablet, it almost requires, something that's to be like essentially what we call here when we build certain devices and put them out. We said like it needs to be penitentiary proof. And penitentiary proof is a really nice baseline if you're going to create particularly interactive artworks that are either going to go outside or going to be used by children who are, you know, you don't want to tell them exactly how to use them. They use things in a really interesting and provocative way. So that's one area where I see like, you know what, I think we could learn a lot from the military in terms of kind of creating things that are not going to become obsolete or incredibly delicate and breaking. I mean, this is where the funding for all this type of research comes from. If you look at some of the most advanced technologies that we're going to see rolling out, like flexible displays, for example, or the idea of being able to create and buy and purchase exoskeletons to facilitate you going hiking. So now you can go hiking and carry a 150-pound bag on your back when you're, you know, somebody like me who's certainly not capable of hiking with something like that. That I do think we see this crossover between tools and technologies that have been developed, whether or not be the internet itself, going back to its early days at ARPA, and things like satellite, that after a while we begin to see that they have a much broader potential for use.
The question of whether you want this sort of technology in the hands of children is one that kind of puzzles me. I was listening to the American comedian Louis C.K. talking recently about why he's not going to provide smartphones for his children. And it's a long series of reasons. But basically, the thing that we are now embroiled in, where we can't help looking at our devices and, you know, it's a nervous reaction and it's somehow a psychological crutch, all of those things that have become absolutely embedded embedded in our culture in the last 4 or 5 years. Is it really something that we want to pass on to children as early as possible? Do you want Iris to get her hands on a tablet now or on a smartphone to get ready for that? Or do you want to keep it away from her as long as possible or even permanently?
Oh, God, no. I let her use my phone, iPhone, all the time. I mean, you can look at it. Why would I take away the tools? When your child sees that these are the tools and the systems and devices that you use to communicate, of course they have a tremendous attraction. They're shiny and you want to play with them. I think the idea of moderating that, we've had these same conversations about television, and going back even further, we've had these about books. When the idea of books came out, people had to learn through the novel. If you look at one of the very first big novels, the novel Pamela, a large part of that book is about what it means to read. It was considered highly antisocial to go off and kind of ignore your family and your fellow colleagues and just kind of go off and spend some completely selfish private space. So a large part of the first types of novels were teaching people that it's okay to do this and what is the value and the utility of reading and how do you negotiate that space. That's several hundred years ago. I think we're always going to have this with technologies, this fear and paralysis of like, well, what are we losing with that? My goal would be, what do you think we're teaching children with a board game such as Monopoly? We're teaching them how to be like capitalistic land developing slumlord owners. That's fine. I think all these things is the idea that you populate children's worlds with all sorts of things. And within reason, for example, the iPad has some really, or not just the iPad, but many tablet devices have some really lovely drawing applications that are, you know, as a parent, you're like, every now and then you're like, I'm really tired of tidying up all that paint everywhere and the markers that go outside the lines. And I'm like, you know, sometimes it's quite nice to just let them doodle around and noodle around on an iPad. And then you can quickly send that drawing to, you know, to their grandparents somewhere. So I think there's pros and cons to all of these things. I don't think it's necessarily useful to take a very rigid position either way, but it's useful to kind of take maybe the next time you go to like a Tommy's or a toy store to kind of take a peek and look around at all the very traditional games as well and see what are the types of lessons that are learned there and how might you gravitate away from them or create a different type of framework around them.
I was talking there to Aisling Kelleher from her desk at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And next time on Culture File, it's time to throw the dice and see if we can land our little metal Xbox controller on McDonald's as we play the global brand's version of an old favourite, Monopoly.